Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome, good morning, salutations. Hello, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks filling in this week for Stephanie and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. And what a week it is. I don't think I've ever been here in a time where the theme song to Stephanie's show has been more appropriate, I have to say. Last night, Democrats in the House passed 219 to 212, the health care bill that Obama has been pushing for with every bit of political might that he has had over the last couple of weeks and the last few months and the last year. A historic bill by all accounts, something that politicians have been trying to do for the last 40 years, 45 years, and it is finally done. Officially, last night, the Senate bill became the law of the land. Now, there is still a reconciliation package that the House agreed on in the third vote last night that will actually make a huge difference in this bill. It'll strip out some of the things that some of us did not like. They had to push that through at the same time to guarantee that the House votes would go through because, quite frankly, the House wasn't trusting the Senate these days. They've got a backup of approximately 240 to 290 bills, depending on who you ask at any given time, that they've put through already and the Senate has not lived up to. So to make sure that everyone felt comfortable with their vote, the Democrats passed not only the bill, the Senate bill as it stands, but also a reconciliation package that outlines exactly what they will be doing going into, you know, once they pass that reconciliation. So there you have it. We are going to go over a good deal of that today, but I really do want to let you hear a little bit of what happened last night as we go forth. Tony is in, of course, the L.A. studio. I'm in New York in Steph's actual seat this week, and I will be streaming from HalSparks.com/livestream or livestream.com/HalSparks, depending on your proclivity. And I want to play for you a little compilation of what happened last night in the final hour or hours of the health care debate. Let's hear that.
Today is a day that's going to rank with the day we passed the Civil Rights Bill in 1964. Today we are doing something that ranks with what we did on Social Security or Medicare. And this is a day in which we can all be proud if we vote for that legislation.
This incredibly expensive $1 trillion health care bill will hurt many that simply currently have insurance. The bill will hurt veterans because it does not accept TRICARE as a qualified medical plan. It'll hurt seniors by cutting Medicare Advantage to fund these new government programs.
On health care, the Democratic Party is the party of hope, and the Republicans are the party of nope. The Democratic health care bill lowers prescription drug costs for seniors, expands coverage to 32 million more Americans, reducing the deficit by $143 billion over the next 10 years, gives middle-class families tax credits to help pay for health coverage. What do the Republicans say to this plan? They say nope.
Tragically, this bill will destroy freedom and do incredible damage to the very fabric of our society. This bill is a bailout for the insurance companies. They get the individual mandate they wanted all along, a mandate that is un-American and unconstitutional. Mark my words, the massive expansion of Medicaid in this bill will bankrupt our states. Premiums for average Americans will go up. Taxes will go up. The deficit will go up. And the debt will go up. This bill is the epitome of Washington politicians telling the American people, we know better how to run your lives than you do. We owe the American people much better than this.
My friends on the Republican side of the aisle keep saying the bill is flawed. The only flaw was when they controlled Congress and had the President of the United States. Not once did they try to pass health care, not even incrementally, as they say we should do now. No longer, when we get sick, will the insurance company say, sorry, we can't cover you. No longer, if you lose your job or change your job, can you not keep your health insurance. You'll be able to keep it. If you have a pre-existing condition, you won't be able to be denied it. If you're 26 years old, you can stay on your parents' policies. There's no annual cap or lifetime cap. We help seniors by closing the donut hole in Medicaid. We save money. It's CBO scored. Everybody wins with this bill, but especially the American people.
Higher premiums, higher taxes, and cutting Medicare is not health care reform. Republicans care about health care, but we don't care for this bill. Unfortunately, the White House and congressional Democrats are still insisting on their massive 2,700-page bill that includes higher premiums, $500 billion in higher taxes, and $500 billion in cuts to senior Medicaid.
What this all boils down to is, whose side are you on? Madam Speaker, I rise today on behalf of the 13,500 people in my district who will finally have access to health insurance because of this measure. I rise for the 1,000 families in South Central Wisconsin who will be protected from medical bankruptcy this year because of this effort.
This bill is little more than a shell game that shifts costs, picks winners and losers, and does nothing to achieve real reform. The American people have resoundingly rejected this dangerous approach. True reform should be accomplished with bipartisan cooperation, not strong-arm tactics.
We all want all people to have access to affordable health care. But this trillion-dollar tragedy is just bad medicine. Medical costs are high, but this bill does absolutely nothing to help reduce costs.
There are those who have told us to start over. There are those who have told us to wait. They have told us to be patient. We cannot wait. We cannot be patient. The American people need health care, and they need it now. On this day, at this hour, stand with the American people and not with the big insurance company. On this day, at this moment, in this chamber, answer the call of history. Answer the spirit of history and pass health care. Give the American people a victory. Give health care a chance.
That is my favorite part of the whole thing, when Lewis says, give health care a chance. Just a little bit of dynamics. You can see how wide the debate actually got, and quite frankly, how a lot of it shifted into, you know, just massive hyperbole. It did, and they weren't even hiding any of it. It, you know, on the Republican side last night, it wasn't that this is going to affect, you know, our medical service, our in this society for the rest of our lives, and you know, you could almost argue about that section of our lives ad infinitum if you wanted to. However, they really were making the argument that it's going to bring down the republic, that the idea that somebody would pass a bill that stops insurers from putting lifetime caps that keep a 15-year-old from being able to get health care because they were born with a genetic disorder that's not going to go away, somehow adding that to a bill, somehow creating a financial an insurance system where everybody in the country can buy into insurance programs across the entire country so that they're not trapped by their state's laws and the crony capitalism of some of the more egregious areas of the red states, where you can only buy into certain areas. And if you're, let's say you're gay and you want domestic partner benefits in your insurance plan, but the insurance company that's in your state doesn't allow it, you were kind of SOL before. Now that's an option. And that's what's going to bring down the republic. That's what's going to destroy America. It's not even that it's just, you know, we're trying to shift how we do health care in this country. It's that we're really trying to jettison the Constitution. And there was plenty, by the way, of physical hyperbole yesterday. There were a bunch of people who showed up, and I mean this literally. There were nearly hundreds of people, and I say hundreds because the estimate by the cops in D.C. was 1,500 to 2,000 people showed up to protest health care reform. Meanwhile, there were 100,000 people on the streets marching for immigration reform, and there were 2,500 people who were marching to end the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But those people aren't important. Just, you know, 102,500 people to 1,500 to 1,800 people. Clearly, it's the Tea Partiers who deserve more press. And in that, there was a little bit of, at least the, you know, the press wasn't, you know, all kind of positive about it. There was actually a few incidents reported where the Tea Partiers were actually protesting people as they went to go to the vote. A staffer for Representative James Clyburn told reporters that Representative Emanuel Cleaver, Democrat of of Maryland had been spit on by a protester. Representative John Lewis, who was who you heard at the very end of that clip, who was a hero of the civil rights movement, was called a racial epithet. The N-word is colloquial referred to politically correctly today and appropriately enough. And Representative Barney Frank was called the F-word as protesters shouted him with a deliberately lispy scream. Frank approached the halls after the president's speech and shrugged off the incident. I'm sure he's had plenty of that in his time. I mean, we can all recall Trent Lott's remarks about him in the past. Clyburn was downright incredulous, though, saying he had not witnessed such treatment since he was leading civil rights protests in South Carolina in the 1960s. Which, by the way, when they were talking about how there's no way that the nation has ever been this divided, I don't think that's necessarily true. If you look at the hosing down of protesters in the 1960s when we're dealing with healthcare or we're dealing with civil rights reform, I think. You know, arguably, we're doing a little bit better now. I mean, it's still bad, and certainly there are these people that I would consider outliers, even in the Tea Party movement, who are acting this way. But we are far beyond that part of it. There's no question that this has been a contentious battle. There is no question that the Congress and the Senate have not been more divided about an issue in a long time. But quite frankly, that's because they haven't taken up anything in a long time that's actually mattered. You know, the last thing I can remember us having a strong, solid debate on. And that was a bill that was this size was the Patriot Act. And quite frankly, that was passed when we were all scared for our lives, essentially. They used that window after 9/11 to shoehorn this gigantic bill that was, I think, a direct affront in a lot of ways to our civil liberties. And yet, anything about that? Not a peep. But now, from the Republican side, now... They're talking about health care reform, this health care reform bill, as if it's the Patriot Act. That's the amazing part. They're talking about it as if it itself does the damage that the Patriot Act did, that it allows for, you know, wiretapping without any kind of a warrant, those kind of things. And they're acting as if when they're standing on the White House, on the Capitol steps or on the lawn with their protest sign, they're really in many ways saying things that should have been said about the Patriot Act. But no. They're talking about health care reform. Their big fear is what will actually shift in this. So let's look at the key details of the bill, what actually passed last night. According to CBO projections, it will cut budget deficits by more than $1 trillion in its second decade. So a lot of this gets added over time. It will subsidize insurance for a family of four making up to $88,000 annually. That's both partners together, or 400% of the federal poverty level. It also creates a series of health insurance exchanges designed to make it easier for small businesses, the self-employed and the unemployed, to pool resources and purchase less expensive coverage. Right now, huge corporations have always been able to buy into these, create deals with the insurance companies. In many ways, what we were trying to do with being able to purchase pharmaceuticals from Canada and the like, that, you know, or allowing the government to purchase medicine for Medicare and Medicaid, at wholesale prices because it's a huge buyer. But, you know, of course, the Republicans fought that. Now we pay basically retail. So this was obviously a big sticking point for them. Medicaid will be significantly expanded, ensuring coverage to those earning up to 133% of the poverty level or just over $29,000 for a family of four. It's amazing to me that $29,000 a year for four people, for a family of four, a wife, a husband, and two children, that's 133% of the poverty levels, $29,000. It must be amazingly cheap to live in some places in this country. It's stunning. Anyways, to have it that low. The bill cuts projected Medicare spending by roughly $500 billion, in part through reductions in Medicare Advantage program. Democratic leaders have promised the reductions will not affect service to Medicare recipients. The bill hikes Medicare payroll taxes on families making more than $250,000. So you will pay more into that, but then, of course, you will get a wider base to pull from. Starting in 2013, it also imposes a 40% tax on insurance companies providing Cadillac health plans valued at more than $8,500 for individuals and $23,000 for families. So if your union or your corporation that you work for, your business, provides you with a health plan that where the premiums cost more than $8,500 a year or $23,000 a year for families, you will get a tax on that as a benefit in many ways as sort of as income, basically. Now, that's the that in and of itself is a big sticking point for a lot of people. And I think reason enough legally, you know, they talk about a lot of the legal challenges that people are going to put forth to try and stop this. I think the most sound one is that I actually don't think anyone is going to expect is going to come from the left, is that in many ways, you know, we are going to get people from the left going, look, if you're going to make me buy into an exchange, I have a real problem with it, having to pay into a company that's a for-profit company. I want a non-profit option. I don't think I should be forced to pay for the profits of a company. So therefore, yes, you can have these in there if people think that's a better product and that one they want to buy it, but I need a public option. Now, Harry Reid has promised to allow a vote in the next couple months on the public option. Once the paperwork and the fanfare settles on this one, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I'm going to take some of your calls. 1-800-STEF-12 is our number calling in. We're of course live streaming at HalSparks.com/livestream or livestream.com/HalSparks. We have Lee Papa, the Rude Pundit, will be with us in the bottom half of the hour at 6:30. And I cannot wait to talk to him about this. His posts on it have been fantastic. So I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie Miller. We'll be right back after this.
That was strangely arousing.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
I know I'm on, but I want to hear this, because I think this is appropriate. You know, people said it wouldn't happen. People said this vote was not going to happen. Last August, dead. Last November, dead. As this bill passed through the House and the Senate, it was never going to go through reconciliation. Democrats were never going to get their act together. They weren't going to be able to scrounge up the votes to make it happen. And now, effectively, health care reform is the law of the land. Pretty stunning. It's pretty amazing. Let it play, Tony. Don't turn it down on me, because I think this is appropriate. You know, you have to remember that strategy in politics is often more important than the polls. There we go. Operation Try Not to Gloat has crashed and burned. I'm serious. I have to offer a huge apology to my friends on the other side, as they like to say in the Senate, that I'm really trying not to grin too much about this. But quite frankly, there is so much good that has been done in the last 24 hours. As much as some of the elements are rough, and there's a lot, by the way, in the reconciliation bill that was passed immediately right after. This is extraordinary. This is something that people said would not happen. People said that Obama not only had lost his mojo, that he didn't have the strategy to do it, that Nancy Pelosi was not capable of getting the votes together, that Harry Reid was too much of a wimp, that the Democrats didn't have the fortitude to do it, or the testicular fortitude, I think is the nicest way I can put it. This was not going to happen. And last night, the impossible occurred. A herd of cats managed to rout their opposition. Last night, of course, Howard Fineman from Newsweek and MSNBC posted a list of what he considered the winners and losers in healthcare reform, which was a pretty fascinating process. By the way, I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller while she's away on vacation this week. The Mooks are taking a well-deserved break. I feel lucky that I get to be here with you in this particular break. That just beautiful. Shiny, happy people. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie Miller and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. You know, I feel shiny and happy today. Mostly shiny. I think I need some powder. We are live streaming at livestream.com/HalSparks as I fill in for Steph while she's away on vacation this week. Much needed, especially in all this lead up and the stress about whether or not the vote would go off last night. And by golly, it did. And I cannot think of a better person to discuss this with than the Rude Pundit himself, Lee Papa, who is with us.
Lee Papa, the Rude Pundit. pundit.
And here he is.
Good morning, baby killer.
How are you? Yes, that was me, actually. My old-fashioned southern accent popped out at the last minute. For those that don't know, when Bart Stupak was basically tearing down his own amendment and making a speech on the floor, a Republican representative from Texas, it is rumored. They have not released the name yet, but hopefully we will.
I believe it was Representative Foghorn Leghorn.
Yes, it might have been here. You know what? I've always felt like he was a misogynist, but not necessarily, you know, rude about it in that regard.
not enough to yell out that,
No, baby killer. Yeah,
right.
You know.
He did love eggs. Anyway, but, I think we should gloat. You were saying,
yeah.
You know, it's okay to sit back and take in all of the hate and bile that's been spewed by the right and finally just lean back and say, hey, that was great. I hope you guys really got your exercise in for the year.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Right. It's hard not to push that button constantly all day today.
That would be a great entire show just doing that.
Yeah, that's right. Just play it on a loop.
That's it.
So, you know, obviously, there, you know, the reconciliation aspect of this bill was a very important part of getting it passed. And I think for a lot of people, even on the left, you know, without it, they would have had a hard time stomaching it. What's your feeling on the Senate handling this part of it now?
I just hope that the Republicans in the Senate don't try to, you know, have an Alamo moment of trying to block it one last time, trying to derail it, because the Senate bill is passed. I mean, there is health care reform.
Yep.
All we're talking about now are a few fixes that Harry Reid pledged to pass. So there's no reason anymore. I mean, are the health insurance companies or whoever going to spend millions more dollars just on the Senate battle?
Right. Yeah, doubtful. I think they're going to start trying to figure a way to wiggle around some of the, you know, the parts of it that they can, and of course they're going to push some money into the legal battle that some of these people are going to try to float, which I think is a failed, it fails at start, but they're going to try.
Right. You can't have some states that will end up embracing it and then other states saying no, I mean, this is a funded mandate. Think of all the unfunded mandates under the Bush administration that they took on.
Stunning.
This is something that the money is actually going to flow to the states for. Mm-hmm. And it's just an ideological appeasement that they're engaged in now. And it's the same thing I heard that there's going to be a challenge possibly on the abortion language also.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, the surprising part is when they go, there are going to be people who will, are going to file lawsuits against this to stop this bill and these parts of it. The funny part is, yeah, but a couple of them are going to come from the left and do things that I think the Republicans don't want to have happen, things that a lot of us have had a problem with. Like I said earlier, adding a public option, I think, has some sort of legal basis now because, you know, the idea that you have to buy insurance, that I can get with, but the idea that you have to buy insurance and you don't have an option to not put profit in someone's pocket or feel like part of your premiums that you're required now to pay aren't just going to line the pockets of the people running the company. So having a public option, I think, is a legitimate argument now.
Totally. And I've always had the opinion, I mean, I respect all of the people on the left and have been with them for part of this battle who have opposed this bill. I understand. I'm also in that camp that says, no, this isn't a good bill. But I just think that the idea that we can pass the concept of healthcare reform ends up being possibly the most important victory, because once you pop that cherry, then it's very easy to get in there again.
Thank you for that analogy. And you're absolutely right. This is also my argument why the right has managed to get so many things through. Not the least of which is the heavy corporate slant of the SCOTUS, of the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
They've done this incrementally from the Ninth Circuit up. I mean, they've really run a game that they have expected to take decades and very effectively, quite frankly, much, to the chagrin of our side. And I think now if you can do anything, you can learn from that part of it.
Right. That the march towards corporatism is something that has got to be halted at some point. You know,
right.
that considering what the major corporations think about every piece of legislation is simply it's simply detrimental to ideas of democracy.
Right, and yet they've been pushing this since Reagan, and they started that march towards it then. You know, the most recent Citizens United ruling was not just something that magically happened out of nowhere. That caught, you remember the lead up to it for 3 months when the ruling was coming was that, oh my God, this is going to happen. We already knew how they were going to rule on this because we knew who they were. We knew that they'd been put in place to do just that. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Republicans have gone through such a conniption fit about this thing, because they do know that this is an incremental push towards single payer, that single payer is a solid system that they fear.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that this is one of the ways you start down that road.
Absolutely. There is simply no way that they can go back and repeal the bill and take health insurance away from people.
Right.
And then say that your kid's pre-existing condition now counts again, and say that we're going to put the donut hole back into, you know, your grandmother's prescription drug plan. They can't do it. And to me, one of the things that's going to happen with this bill is I really think this bill is going to end up proving to be a kind of what's a polite word? I was going to go cluster F, but that's a polite way to say it.
Sure.
That inevitably it's going to lead to things like a public option, which inevitably will lead to at some point, maybe while we're still alive, to single payer.
I don't doubt it for a second. I think, you know, it's a system that's working for a lot of other countries. It's providing a much higher level of health care for a much lower cost. It's not detrimental to doctors. It's not detrimental to the medical system, the pharmaceutical companies that actually do exist in France and in England and in Germany don't have a problem coming up with treatments. A lot of them don't get into this country because they actually work.
Mm-hmm.
And they cure a disease instead of prolong it. That's the amazing thing. How many treatments have we heard of that have come from countries with quote unquote socialized medicine, with single payer systems that cure a disease instead of just turning it into a chronic pill popping syndrome?
Exactly.
Because there's no profit incentive in keeping people ill. Right now we still have that as part of the system, and that's slowly going away.
Right. But again, leaving out the fact that they left out the negotiated drug prices as part of the fix of the Medicaid prescription drug plan also demonstrates the continued power of that lobby.
Right. And also because the Republicans, because there are elements that could not in the reconciliation rules allow for parts of that to pass. And so they had to strip out. One of the things was the block against the raisin premiums. This is the ironic part. If the Republicans had not fought this so hard, and if the 30 Democrats that had voted against it hadn't fought it so hard and were willing to go along, they could have left in the part of this bill that would allow the government to keep insurance companies from jacking up your rates 40% in a year, or 120%, or how, because there's really no cap on it. They can just raise it however they would like.
Right.
In the middle of your illness, in the middle of your situation where they've denied you care, let's say, they're only going to pay a certain amount of your treatment, then you have to pour more out of pocket to get the treatments that you need. You're already in a fix. And then these companies can raise your premiums 40, 60, 80%. That part had to be stripped out because of the Republicans' fight against it.
Let me recommend something that I read this morning that was pretty amazing. Was David Frum's piece called
The Waterloo piece?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty stunning, and I recommend it to anybody listening because it is.
Yeah, tell them about it.
It's David Frum saying, the first line of it is, conservatives and Republicans today suffered their most crushing legislative defeat since the 1960s. And he just goes through the reasons that the radical right overplayed its hand and to the detriment of the Republican Party. And he just says that we gave in to the Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck stream of the party. And he concludes this great line, so today's defeat for free market economics and Republican values, which of course is his belief in the bill, is a huge win for the conservative entertainment industry. Their listeners and and viewers will now be even more enraged and frustrated, even more disappointed. For them, it's mission accomplished. For the cause they purport to represent, it's Waterloo, all right, ours. And he just says that this is something that is going to damage the Republican Party for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the not voting for this bill, not trying, even in your own when you had control of the House and the Senate and the presidency, the Republicans don't even suggest things like this. And then when the Democrats come in and suggest it, they say, we have plenty of ideas. We would love to fix all this stuff. We have great ideas. We really do care about this issue. Well, if you cared about it, then you would have done something when there was no push from the other side. You would have instigated this fight. And Obama came in saying this was a part of his agenda that he was not going to bend on. This was something he was going to fight for. It became very politically, it became a political hot potato. It has been for 40 years, but it became very negative on his poll numbers for quite some time. And yet, ultimately, it was something that needed to be done, needed to be addressed, needed to be pushed. And he kept at it. You got to give the guy credit in that regard.
Yeah.
And everybody else was jumping ship, including, like I said, 30 Dems in the House.
Well, I think the post-Scott Brown landscape for him was either to capitulate and coast and hope to stave off whatever losses they were going to have in this year, or to go for it and say, all right, you know what, let's fight for something. Let's show we can fight. And that to me is one of the great political accomplishments of this, is that it showed the Democrats have the fight in them again. And hopefully this actually is not the end of that fight, but the beginning of something where they demonstrate they can coalesce around these issues.
Well, now, you know, and we're going to talk about this after the break. If you can stick around with us, that would be awesome.
Sure.
I'm talking, of course, Lee Papa, the Rude Pundit, rudepundit.blogspot.org. Am I getting it?
Rudepundit.blogspot.com.
Com, yes. Thank you. It should be a money-making endeavor. we'll be right back after this. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. We'll also be taking some of your calls after this. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We are live streaming at halsparks.com/livestream, and you can join in the chat. We got 224 people in there right now. Very exciting. And we'll see you right after this.
Ow. I just snarfed oatmeal out my nose. It must be the Stephanie Miller Show.
Hal Sparks filling in for Stephanie Miller.
Stephanie Miller.
While she's away on vacation, the Mooks are away as well. Jim and Chris, Boy Toy Chris LaVoy, and voice deity Jim Ward, and Rebecca are away. I'm here with, I've got the lovely Tony Sorrentino, and of course, our L.A. Bureau running the board, holding things down, helping us pick music. That's Waterloo by ABBA. Referenced and recommended by somebody in our chat room on live stream, and in reference to a David Frum article that Lee Papa was just talking about. Lee is still with us. You there, Lee?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic. So, by the way, the rudepundit.blogspot.com. Fantastic, by the way, your blog on the vote on healthcare reform, the end of the Tea Party, I think is terrific.
Thank you. I think that they're going to. I think the Tea Party's over.
Yeah.
They're going to try, but it's going to shrink and is.
Well, it kind of already has been. I mean, you got to give them a little bit of credit, considering you know. Now, granted, this was all sort of manufactured discontent, as it were, going into the summer. You know, there were a decent number of these folks, and then as the bills started to actually pass, those numbers started to dwindle, and then this time around, there were just 2,000 people. It was looked like a light bright that you know the bulb had gone out on. You know, there were just a bunch of pegs on a board.
With really, really great signs. My favorite is the guy that said that the sign that said that they were going to start shooting. I can't remember what the sign was.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. If a Brown doesn't do it, then a Browning will.
Then a Browning will.
And a picture of a handgun.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And I thought, a lot of the things they did, they just don't make any logical sense.
Right.
Like, I just couldn't understand why yell the N-word and homophobic insults at legislators. I thought, I don't even get why. How does that make sense?
Right. I don't think it does. I just think that's who they are.
Yeah. How is John Lewis an N-word for supporting health care reform? I don't even get it.
Well, the amazing thing is, again, you know, and I brought this up before, but, you know, if you're looking at, you know, bills to stand on the lawn and hold up a you are destroying my liberty kind of sign, wouldn't that have been the Patriot Act? Where were these folks during that whole kerfuffle? But no, it's the idea that we might expand S-CHIP that it drives these people, you know, to where that's the last straw.
That is.
I am not going to take this line down. It's civil war because people 144% above the poverty level might get a little bit of extra help with their insurance. It's so stunning.
Yeah, I just love it. Civil war because there's going to be a insurance exchange with different policies that they can. I just think, is this where our causes have gotten to?
Yeah, exactly. They're standing there holding a sign, willing to shoot someone, call them the N-word or the F-word, over the fact that adult children may now remain as dependents on their parents' policy until their 27th birthday. Children under the age of 19 may not be excluded for pre-existing conditions.
Well, you know,
free preventive care for all. Like, this is what they're really like. This is it!
Well, you know, only N-words and F-words would like that. It's really in their platform.
Well, it's just amazing to me that you literally have, you've got Glenn Beck drumming up essentially this, you know, FEMA camp fever about, you know, that this is the end of the United States as we know it. These are, you know, this is the death of America. This is the movement in of Stalinism. And it really, I mean, literally, one of the immediate benefits of health care reform, and I want to read a couple of these, it's kind of stunning. One of them is requirement that all insurers must post their balance sheets on the Internet and fully disclose administrative costs, executive compensation packages, and benefit payments so that when you're buying into an insurance plan, you know whether that money is actually going to get paid out for health care or if it's just going into the pocket of some dude who's jacking up the, you know, the bottom line by kicking people off.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That requires math, and I think that part of math was actually banned by the Texas Board of Education.
It was, and replaced with, finger painting.
Yeah.
But only in red, white, and blue. We got 2 minutes left with the lovely and talented Lee Pompa, the Rude Pundit. Now, I think Harry Reid has promised this vote on a public option in the next little bit. What do you think the next stages of this are going to be, besides the reconciliation going through the Senate?
I think at some point they're going to have to pass some things that are going to get the left fully on board. And I think that obviously the public option vote's going to happen. It's not going to pass. It's going to be a few years before that passes.
Right.
But I think that it's going to have to be one of those panacea votes. Like, okay, Dennis Kucinich, bring it up. We'll vote on it.
Right.
Or Alan Grayson's got this great idea of the Medicare buy-in.
Yeah, anybody can buy into Medicare, and they just pay the premium like anybody else would.
Right. And it just putting Medicare in as one of the insurance plans in the exchange. Again, something that makes sense in so many ways, but I still think it's going to end up being a couple of years before we see that. Nothing much is going to happen before the midterms at this point. I think all of the healthcare courage has been used up. Now let's move on to immigration reform.
Right, which is so easy.
Oh yeah.
kind of stunning. And the funny part, I think, is that in the Senate bill, actually, there is an allowance in the exchange for the creation of government-overseen nonprofits.
Right.
So there can now be, you know, sort of like the Fed is incorporated. You could actually incorporate a new insurance company that is nonprofit that will find its way into the exchange and will be overseen by a federal regulator so that their money does go to healthcare.
Ooh, could we start one? Could we start the yay abortion healthcare plan?
Totally.
But no federal money. No federal money.
That's what they're expecting, so why not give it to them? Let's give them some.
Exactly. That way it'll say on your insurance card, I've got the yay abortion healthcare plan.
Exactly. Lee Pompa, the Rude Pundit, rudepundit.blogspot.com. And, of course, you are on the Twitter.
I am on the Twitter.
As Rude Pundit.
And And on the Facebook, too.
Oh, fantastic.
Where there's
much
chatting.
People should hit you on all those places. I'm Hal Sparks. Thank you so much, man. And we will talk again later this week, hopefully, because I think this immigration thing is going to kick off.
All right.
Yeah. Cheers. Yay. Rude Pundit.
Bye-bye.
There he is. Yay. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie Miller and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. We will be back right after this, and I'll be taking your calls. 1-800-STEPH-12, StephanieMiller.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation, and I know that everyone we sorely miss.
Stephanie Miller.
But she will be back next week. They're taking a vacation. Leading up to this health care vote was, you know, the stress was enough to take it out of anybody. So they are on vacation for a week, and I will be filling in from the New York Bureau. And, of course, in Los Angeles, we have Tony holding down the board and Miranda, of course, doing our call screening, doing yeoman's work making that happen. I'm lucky to be joined now by Igor Volsky. Let's see if I can actually cue him in because I'm doing the system myself. Igor Volsky from the Center for American Progress, healthcare researcher, blogger. He's a healthcare researcher and blogger for thinkprogress.org, the Progress Report at American Progress. Prior to joining the Center, Igor blogged at bodypolitic.org and interned with Think Progress. He's Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, FAIR, which is a fantastic organization. Igor, are you with us?
Yes, how are you? And today I'm certainly walking on sunshine.
Yes, I think never more appropriate is Stephanie's theme song.
Yeah, I was dancing to the song while you queued me up.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning. You know, this is a big, big deal. And, you know, people will try to play this down. This morning, on Morning Joe, It was almost pathetic how, like, Joe Scarborough was just going, this is just going to guarantee the loss. This is going to go, the Dems are going down for this huge spending package, blah, blah. And it's like, I don't think so.
Yeah, you know, we're going to step back after kind of the day-to-day back and forth about this reform is done, and we're really going to realize what a tremendous accomplishment for this president in his first year to do what generations of lawmakers tried and failed. You know, some very serious and accomplished politicians couldn't get this done, and he could. And I think in many ways it's really a victory for America's soul. You know, it sounds maybe hyperbolic, but we've had decades and decades of special interests waging war against any kind of progressive reform, and very frequently they've won. But this time they didn't. You know, the bill certainly is a compromise. It's not what you or I would have written, but it's such a major step forward. And, you know, these victories don't happen very frequently, and I really hope we all cherish today and the days that come when he signs the bill.
Yeah, like I said, this is kind of an amazing a part to all this is that these are elements that have been around for a long time. People knew these things were needed, you know, from the beginning of healthcare, and still haven't been able to put any of it together. And the Republicans have been crying out that, you know, the Dems aren't listening to their ideas, and that they would have done these things. They want to do these things. They love doing these things, and never even suggested it. And when they did put together Medicare Part D, it has this huge donut hole, which this closes, which is one of the things that goes into effect immediately as soon as it's signed, even without the reconciliation aspects of it. All that stuff, that's still there. This is, I think, what being a Democrat is all about, really, is that is putting forth this tough type of stuff and actually getting it through. This is a big, big deal.
You know, and I think a lot of the fault, the blame, goes to Nancy Pelosi, I think, in many, many ways. We saw some really interesting stories come out on Sunday that after Scott Brown's election, the White House was in a bit of a loss about what to do. Do we go small? Do we keep the same proposal, or do we kind of break it up into separate pieces? And she was really instrumental in holding down the pressure and saying, we have to get this done, and we have to do it in a big way. She called some aides in the White House wanted to do a small bill, and she called that kitty care, right to their faces. And she, you know, was in charge of the whip operation in the House in the last few days, and personally met for hours and hours and hours with wavering Democrats. And I think before long, we're all going to be watching C-SPAN, and they're going to be holding these committee hearings in the Pelosi building, because she's really going to go down in history, I think, as one of the greatest speakers this Congress has had, especially in the face of such united Republican opposition. Really, really remarkable.
Well, it's interesting that she, in many ways, you know, the Senate usually holds so much sway that Harry Reid's kind of ineffectiveness may have inadvertently played into that as well, you know, because she has done such, you know, hard yeoman's work, you know, getting bills up the hill, and they, a lot of them have stalled in the Senate. And but her ability to get everybody together and build a consensus is genuinely stunning. It's, and I think it probably makes them twist in the wind like nobody's business that, that the first female speaker and the first black president are getting all this stuff done. It must just freak them out. And I think, you know, we had Lee Pop on before, and he was wondering, you know, where do these racial epithets and these, you know, like homophobic epithets that they were yelling at everyone as they were going to, you know, to vote on this, where do they come from? And I really do think the fact that they look at this is, oh, my God, they're taking over. You know, God.
President Obama yesterday, after the House vote, had said, this is what change looks like.
Yeah. And, you know, you can almost hear a little, like, in the background, like, what was that? That was a Republican head exploding.
You know, you're right about the Senate, and that's where that's the next stage of this battle, where the reconciliation package now goes to the Senate, and Republicans have said that they're going to bring up a point of order about Social Security. There's this rule in the reconciliation process in the Senate that you can't use reconciliation to change the Social Security program. And according to the Congressional Budget Office, they do change some spending in Social Security.
Awesome. Before you explain this, I want people to know how awesome this is. This is the biggest evasion I've ever heard in trying to stop a bill. This is the Republican argument for how they can stop this bill because it changes Social Security. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. No, and so they're going to bring up this point of order. The parliamentarian is going to have to vote. Now, I'm sorry, he's going to have to decide. Though many people don't understand that the parliamentarian doesn't actually rule. He only advises. And it's the head of the Senate, who is the vice president, who, you know, accepts the parliament, can choose to accept the parliamentarian's advice or disregard it. And so I asked a congressional expert, Sarah Binder, what she thought would happen with this point of order, because that has been their talking point all day yesterday, that you pass this reconciliation package, it will go to the Senate, and it will die in the Senate. And she told me that if the Senate parliamentarian decides that some provisions can't be in the reconciliation bill because they touch Social Security, the Democrats are going to either need 60 votes to override the parliamentarian, which they certainly don't have, or they're going to have to use Joe Biden, which, you know, to this point I thought is what they would do. But she said she would be very surprised if that's what happened. She said that, she called it a nuclear option, very unlikely that he would ever overrule the parliamentarian. So we're going to have to see. But as you know, if they change one little piece in this reconciliation package, it's going to go back to the House.
Right. That's what the goal of the second vote last night was. When the Republicans offered up a vote to change basically push forward the Stupak Amendment as it originally was written, because that would change the initial bill and crash the whole thing. And that's where Bart Stupak actually had to stand up and talk down his own bill.
Yeah, and that was, I thought That's fairly good of him. You know, we've villainized, I mean, I think rightfully so in many ways, Bart Stupak throughout this whole process.
Right.
But he really, you know, he had to cave when he accepted the executive order, not because, as they say, the executive order is not, you know, as powerful as law or anything like that, but because he was making the argument before that money is fungible, and so if a woman who receives affordability credits also pays for abortion, then she could have used some of the affordability credits for abortion, even though she's using out of her own money. It's a very, very silly argument.
Right.
But he walked back from that to vote for this bill. And what he did on the floor last night I thought was admirable, as much as we don't like him, to say that this amendment, this motion to recommit, masquerades as life, but it's really about denying coverage to 32 million Americans. And,
yeah.
You know, progressives are very worried about that vote, and thankfully it was defeated.
Yeah, it was. And I think there's a similar, you know, element of what they would try in the Senate. The other element is, and this is the one thing I wanted to bring up, and this is the hilarious part. The reason that they think they can stop this is because you're not allowed to use reconciliation to change Social Security. And the reason that they think that this bill will change Social Security and gives them the right and the ability to turn it down is because it will raise wages. This is their argument, that people will make more money after this bill is passed, and therefore more money will be going through taxes into the Social Security system. So that effectively changes Social Security. This is their, like, just round the outside argument for why.
Yeah.
This actually is, that's such a stunning leap of logic that, oh my God, this will actually put more money in people's pockets, and if people have more money in their pockets, they will get taxed more, and if they're taxed more, those tax dollars will go into the Social Security fund, and that affects Social Security, so you can't do this bill because anything that puts money into people's pockets can now no longer be done with reconciliation because that will affect taxation, which goes to Social Security. It's so, that is the most alcoholic kind of argument. I mean, you have to be drunk to even like allow that into your brain.
Yeah, we'll see what state the parliamentarian is in when he rules. But you're right, and they're going to use every trick in the book. You know, reconciliation, there's only 20 hours of debate, limited number of amendments. But once you get outside of that 20-hour window, they're going to bombard this thing with amendments endlessly, as quickly as they can write them, and really force the Democrats to take some tough votes. So, you know, this thing, I think the first leg is over. The kind of the foundation,
right,
the meat of reform, I think the president's going to sign in the next 2 days. But what happens to this reconciliation package? We're going to have to watch that very closely.
Yeah, absolutely. Igor Volsky from the Center for American Progress, thank you for talking us through some of the more mechanical aspects of this as well. This is going to be fun going into this, the Senate part of all this. But as you said, this is the law of the land now. Anything that they vote against is actually taking out, you know, if they don't like the Cornhusker kickback and all the Gatorade and all that stuff, then they're going to want this reconciliation part. It'll be interesting to see if there's even a couple of Republicans who are willing to vote on this, because if they don't, they leave those parts as law of the land, and they'll have to run on that in the fall. So
that's a good point, yeah.
So thank you so much, Igor Volsky, everybody. Fantastic. Thank you so much. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. It is the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm smart, you're dumb. I'm big, you're little. I'm right, you're wrong. And there's nothing you can do about it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Sparks filling in for Steph and the Moose while they're away on vacation. It's a wonderful time we're having a celebration, because last night health care reform passed in the House 219-212. A historic day by all accounts, and an amazing show. I want to go to some of the calls, because some of these people have been waiting for quite a long time, and I appreciate that. I want to go to Shannon in Dallas, Texas. Shannon, you there?
How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for hanging in there. We just have so many wonderful guests on. It's just hard to cram the calls in.
Okay. Can I please tell you how fantastic you really are? I forgot that Steph was going to be out of town, and when I turned on the radio, I was so surprised first that she was letting you talk so much, and then I was like, wait, she's not there.
Right.
But way to cover this very fabulous day with such vigor and enthusiasm.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it is really stunning. I don't think we can really
appreciate it.
Yeah, not really.
Mm-mm.
And as the years go on, it's going to get even better. That's the amazing part. Some of this stuff goes into effect immediately.
Right, right. And, I think it's okay that some of it's going to take a little longer because I think it would be overwhelming all at once. But I think the important thing is that finally we're starting to take care of each other.
Right.
At least we're on the right track.
What a crazy notion.
I know.
And if you really want to talk about the Christian roots of this country, and there's all sorts of debate about that. Of course, many of our founding fathers were deists,
mm-hmm.
Who were not Christian by any stretch of the imagination. But if you want to go that route, at the very least, where we are now, and a lot of people, how they feel about this, this is a Christian thing to do. And it's funny that we literally had Glenn Beck saying that having the vote on a Sunday was an affront to God.
I know. It always blows my mind that anybody would think to speak for God.
That's been an issue since.
Saying it's an affront to God, like God is going to be angry with us.
Right, very angry that we want to allow people to be on their parents' plans until they're 27 years old.
Well, most of them aren't getting jobs when they get out of school now. I think that's only fair.
And that's a big part of why I think this was added. And thank you so much for calling, Shannon.
You're welcome. Thank you for being so wonderful. Have a great week.
Oh, no worries. Call in the rest of the week. That's totally cool. I want to, let's see. Hold on. There we go. And I want to go to, where is it? John in Durham, because John was holding on a long time. John, are you there?
Hey, Hal. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, brother.
I just want to say a couple of nice things about our new friend, Bart Stupak.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Isn't it? Because he got us the votes to win. But even mm-hmm. though he's one of those men who wants to make every decision for women about abortions everywhere, all the time, he got us the votes to win. Mm-hmm. But I think he can do us an even greater service, and here's how.
Mm-hmm.
Because of his obstreperous opposition, we have this very complicated thing where if a woman wants abortion coverage, she has to write a separate check. Well,
right.
How do you advertise it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I claim you do it by first showing a nice picture of Bart Stupak. He looks like Mitt Romney with a human face.
Right.
And
he's got David Gregory's hair, which I think is dangerous because of what's going on inside David Gregory's head. Clearly that affects what his hair looks like.
This is true. I can't excuse that. But this will make it even more effective. So you show this picture of Bart Stupak. We'll even let him smile, okay?
Uh-huh.
And you say, women, this is Bart Stupak. If you get an unplanned pregnancy, do you want to make the decision yourself with your close associates and your friends and your religious advisor? Or do you want the decision made by Bart Stupak? And then you say, you have to sign a check and buy Stupak insurance to protect you if you need an abortion.
Right. That's an excellent point, John, and I thank you for the call. It's, that's the thing. This whole argument has been about people stepping in between you and your doctor. How can they step in between you and your doctor? That's what the government wants to do. Set up a bureaucracy that's between you and your doctor. And then what do? They step in between you and your doctor. It's so stunning to me. Let's see. I'm going to go with Joel because he has an issue with the mandate, the fine. Joe, you there?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for holding on.
Yeah, thanks. I'm a libertarian, so mm-hmm. obviously I'm not really too happy about this whole situation. But
are you upset with all of it? I mean, do you think the donut hole close is a bad idea? About preventative care, that kind of stuff?
Basically all of it. I'm pretty much against any government intervention in anything.
Okay, so really? Anything? Really? Living in Somalia would be a good idea?
Let me put it this way. I just want government as limited as possible. Okay, and that's just my personal belief.
Sure, okay.
I'm coming from kind of an odd angle here because this actually might help me, but once again, I still don't think it's a good idea. Apparently, there's going to be a $750 fine if you don't get health insurance, and once again, we're forcing people to buy health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I work at a facility, and we have something called Fringe. And every month, we get $800 a month extra for our pay. If you have a spouse who has health insurance, that $800 a month goes into your 401k. Mm-hmm. If you don't, that $800 goes to pay for your health insurance. Now,
right.
With this whole idea here, I could very well say, you know what, I'm young, I'm healthy, I don't need health insurance, so why don't
well,
I
that's
just have
that,
it?
Yeah, but you can't actually make that statement. That's one of the problems with this, is that, and I have to go because we only have a minute left, but I do want to address that. That's come up a bunch, which is this, I'm young and I'm healthy and I don't need insurance, as if being young and healthy will keep you from being hit by a bus or getting a cancer diagnosis that you didn't plan on. The idea, and then what happens in that situation is that you end up paying, you end up going to an emergency room, getting care, and those costs move on to everyone else because you can't afford to pay them. No one can afford that kind of a diagnosis. My name's Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller on the Stephanie Miller Show while they're away on vacation. StephanieMiller.com, 1-800-STEPH12. We'll be back right after this, taking your calls, 1-800-STEPH12. Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Operation Try Not to Gloat is a massive failure this morning. I'm all but dancing in the studio, and it is not being helped by the fact that we've had Lee Papa, the Root Pundit, on to talk about why this is a good thing. Igor Volsky from the Center for American Progress. And we also, luckily for me, have on the line Jessica Ahrens, director. Let me try and get her on here. Director of the Women's Health and Rights Program at the Center for American Progress. Are you on there, Jessica?
I am. Good morning.
There you are. Hiya.
Hi.
this is a big day, and you know, it was funny that this whole all the positive aspects of this bill were almost torpedoed by Bart Stupak, and then in many ways he became sort of the accidental hero of the hour.
Right, right. Well, I don't know how accidental, at least on his part, that it was, but
right.
I think it was fairly strategic. But,
yeah.
But it was quite a moment last night for those of us really into the weeds on this, who were watching the vote and the final statements.
Absolutely. It was tense at a couple of moments. You know,
it was very tense, yeah. And there was a point where he stood up and he kind of took on the mantle of defending the bill that he'd been attacking for so long, and really deflected the Republicans' last attempt to kill it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he became kind of the biggest weapon against their argument. You know, that he really he was, because he'd fought such a hard fight against it and was, you know, such a, you know, a monkey wrench in the system, that when he finally got up, you know, stood up and said, "This does what it's supposed to do. This doesn't change the Hyde Amendment. It still protects everything. The president has assured me of that." And you know, it basically keeps the law the way it is. They had to believe him to some degree, with the exception of the person who yelled "baby killer," I suppose.
Yeah, that was another unbelievable moment. Someone from the Republican side had shouted out "baby killer," much in the same way Joe Wilson had shouted out "you lie," mm-hmm. when President Obama had given his State of the Union speech and was talking about immigration a couple years ago. So, it's, you know, I think showing how far they've gone into the deep end of the absurd. I mean, Bart Stupak and I certainly don't agree on everything,
right.
Not when it comes to abortion. But, you know, I do think that he has a fairly strong belief, a strong commitment to his stated philosophy, you know, of opposing abortion. And so for someone to call him a baby killer is really outrageous. I think it's an outrageous term regardless of when it's used and against
mm-hmm.
him, but especially
right.
in that situation, it's preposterous.
Right. Especially coming from him. I think, you know, I think they've kind of, there was such a level of desperation, especially late into the fight.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of stunning. I mean, if you look at how Boehner was reacting when he was going, if you think anybody here believes this is actually going to improve things, then you're wrong. And everybody went, yeah, we kind of do. And he was like, well, it doesn't. That was basically his argument. His Boehner's argument could have been boiled down to nuh-uh.
Right, right. He said we're not going to accept reality. We're not going to accept the fact that we need this bill, that millions of Americans don't have health insurance, don't have any way to get it, can't afford it. Those who do have insurance can be kicked off it without any notice, because they get sick and this is, you know, sending them into bankruptcy. The people are losing their homes. I mean, it's the ostrich effect. I think they just bury their head in the sand. They try to ignore all the problems that exist and say, we don't have any problems that we really have to fix. I'm very proud of the fact that despite so much opposition from them that, you know, we now have a health care bill that is really so close to the finish line. It still has to get through the Senate, so we're not completely done yet. But I think, you know, in the next week or so.
Well, the reconciliation part of it does. But in all honesty, this bill is law of the land right now.
Well, that's true. That is law. That is true.
All it needs is the president's reform. Yep. All these elements, all the things, children under 19 not being excluded from pre-existing conditions, free preventative care for all. Adults with pre-existing conditions can buy into a national high-risk pool until the exchanges come online now. They get tax credits for 2009, 2010, which could be as much as 50% of what they pay for their health employees insurance. The donut hole closes for Medicare. My favorite is the requirement that all insurers have to post their balance sheets on the internet and fully disclose administrative costs, executive compensation packages, and benefit payments. That's stunning.
Yeah, it's great. There's the sunshine law aspect of it, the fact that we're going to be able to shine a light on how these companies are making their profits and who's benefiting because we know who's been suffering and who's been paying the costs. Mm-hmm. And now we'll have some disincentives built into shaking down the customers so much.
Right. Well, you know, you're going to get a good deal of fight from the Republicans anytime you try to cut into the profits of any company. And I think that was a big part of what was going on here. Because if you really look at the better parts of this bill, and there are many of them, it really does chip away at this, this kind of run amok. I mean, the insurance companies were the only ones who were they could avoid antitrust regulation. I mean, literally, they get to sidestep that whole thing. They could just lock up an entire state. If you lived in a state where where a gay couple lived and the insurance company there was very, kind of owned by a right-wing dude and he was a friend of the governor's and, he didn't want to give domestic partner benefits as part of their plans or they would deny them and just wasn't for sale. Now with this exchange, you can buy into another company and those companies in an attempt to keep, and to get more clients, more customers, we'll start offering those things if people want them. And that's a fantastic thing. Quite frankly, a free market solution, which is one of these things that they always seem to jump around. And yet they can't stand the idea because they know.
Yeah, and that's been one of the most interesting aspects of this debate. It's kind of topsy-turvy. People usually think that government regulation is incompatible with free market competition, but actually, because healthcare is not a regular market good, it doesn't operate in the same way that, I don't know, you're selling peanuts would or something. And so, the supply and demand, it doesn't correlate in the way a normal market would operate.
Because
kind of regulation. You need a floor below which the companies can't reach to ensure some protections for the consumer and to ensure that there actually is some choice for the consumer. So now we'll set up these exchanges where the companies will have to compete with each other and offer better benefits and better terms and prices to the consumer, and everyone will benefit. We'll be able to bend the cost curve, start to bring down some of the costs related with the health insurance system, and cover more people. So despite all the demonization that's been going on, this bill will do a lot to help everyone.
Absolutely. And the fascinating part is that you know, health, when you talk about healthcare as a privilege, not a right, you know, as a as a product, you know, one of the, you know, one of the big sort of outsider libertarian viewpoints on this, Ron Paul, you know, brings up constantly that healthcare is a privilege, not a right. You know, that it's sort of this kind of, it's a choice. It's like what, you know, what kind of picnic basket you have, or what kind of flat screen TV you have. You know, it's not, everybody doesn't deserve it. And and, you know, that part of it is kind of amazing, because you know what kind of TV you want. You can, that's based on desire. That's based on what you want, not what you need per se. Healthcare, not only is it based on something you need, but you might even not be aware when you need it. You might not even have the option to decide when that need comes. You know, like, you can decide, I need to eat every day at lunchtime, but if I skip lunch, I'm going to be okay. But when you start doing that with medication or medical treatments or surgery, that's a slippery slope into a very dark area, and that's where a lot of our seniors have found themselves, especially with the donut hole in Medicare, which this thing fixes. So, you know, the idea that, you know, we have healthcare as a for-profit, genuinely for-profit system. It's one thing to be good at something as a surgeon and go, okay, I really want to go see that guy because he's really good at, you know, hand surgery or something like that, so I'll pay extra to get to see him. That's one thing. But the idea that the entire system is based on that is just insanity.
Right, right. No, I mean, it's good that we're kind of nipping that in the bud now, finally. I think that that's the other reason I think, though, that we've seen such strong opposition to health reform is because for some segment of our population, it scares them to think about healthcare as a human right. They prefer to think about it as a privilege, because if it's a privilege, then they don't have to make sure that everyone has access to it. But if it's a right, we are extending, you know, we are acknowledging the rights, and we are, you know, putting on our government an obligation to ensure that people have those rights. So not to take things out of the clouds too much today, but that is why the one piece of all of this that was disappointing, of course, was what happened with abortion, because to the extent, you know, if you believe abortion is a right, if you believe healthcare is a right, this is the one area where rights weren't increased, but rather scaled back some in all the deal-making that occurred.
For all practical purposes, was it just anchored in the Hyde Amendment, or was there one specific element that pushed it back a little further?
Well, actually, what's so ironic about Stupak and others' opposition to the Senate bill around the abortion language is that not only did it include the Hyde principle in there about no public funding for abortion, but Senator Nelson had managed to get in a last-minute change to the bill back when they needed his 60th vote, that imposes a brand new restriction on the private insurance market and the insurance coverage of abortion that didn't exist before, because it's so wacky, frankly, for lack of a better word. But it basically, what's going to happen is that in the exchange, the insurance plans can decide whether or not to cover abortion. But right now, it's a standard part of most private insurance plans that they do cover abortion.
Right.
If someone chooses a plan that covers abortion, they're going to have to send in two premium payments every month, separate payments. One for the part that covers the cost of their abortion coverage, and one for the rest of all the services that get covered in their plan.
Right, an awkward firewall that's completely unnecessary just so we can tap dance around
need
this.
And both are coming out of your private checking account. So this has nothing to do with public money. This has nothing to do with government funding of abortion. As it is, any government subsidies you're getting to help with your premiums are already going into a separate pot.
And they would go directly into
the legislation.
And they would they would only go into the portion of it that doesn't allow for abortions. So that's already
Absolutely.
Taken care of. I appreciate it.
That's right.
Jessica Ahrens, Director of the Women's Health and Rights Program at the Center for American Progress, thank you so much for talking through us on this particular element of the issue. We're going to take a break right now. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm going to get to your calls right after this break. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. We're live streaming at halsparks.com/livestream or livestream.com/halsparks. You can join in our chat. We got 291 people in there. I'm also going to address some of what they're talking about in there, because it's a great conversation that's happening. We got some really bright people in there saying some really bright things. I'm talking to you, Ginger. I'm talking to you, Jess. I'm talking to you, Captain. Well, I can't say your name on the air. we'll be back right after this. 1-800-STEPH-12.
I am shocked and appalled.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's Hal Sparks a Million for Steph and the Moose while they're away on vacation. It is the day after the passage of a historic health care reform bill in the House. Even though the reconciliation part of the bill still has to go through the Senate bill that went through the House is now the law of the land. All the elements of that bill, and we've been talking to them today, but I will remind you of some of them. These are things that go... Here's 10. This is straight from Crooks and Liars, by the way. They were nice enough to compile this. Caroli put this on. 10 benefits that come online within 6 months of the president's signature. These are immediate changes. Adult children can remain on dependents on their parents' policies until their 27th birthday, which is in this economy very helpful. Children under 19 cannot be excluded for pre-existing conditions no matter what. No more lifetime or annual caps on coverage. So if you got a 16-year-old kid with a genetic disorder, he's not going to run out of money one day and become uncovered after that. Free preventative care for all. This is one of the big things that will bring down health care costs over time. Adults with pre-existing conditions can buy into a national high-risk pool until the exchanges come online. While these are not cheap, these exchanges, they're still better than total exclusion, and you get some benefit from a wider pool of insured people. Small businesses will be entitled to a tax credit for 2009-2010 that could be as much as 50% of what they pay for their employees' health insurance payments. The donut hole for Medicare closes, making prescription medications more affordable for seniors. Requirement that all insurers, and I love this part, post their balance sheets on the Internet and fully disclose administrative costs, executive compensation packages, and benefit payments so that when you choose one of them on the exchange, you know which company is putting more towards actual health care or more that's just padding the pockets of the guys running the place. And it authorizes early funding of community health centers in all 50 states. This is Bernie Sanders' amendment. This is what Bernie Sanders put in. Community health centers provide primary dental and vision services for people in the community based on a sliding scale of payment according to ability to pay. So if you got money, it's a normal kind of payment scale, and it's there. And if you don't have any money, you're taken care of. So it's great for getting lowering the amount of communicative diseases and chronic diseases in a community. It raises the health of a community overall. That's pretty spectacular. So I want to go to some of our callers because you guys have really been wanting to weigh in on this. Let's go to Charlie in Madison, Wisconsin. Charlie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you doing?
I'm terrific. Thanks for hanging in there.
You betcha. I just want to kind of thank you guys for keeping the light burning while we were in the dark for the last couple of months because
right.
I found myself screaming at the radio more times than not, and at least with you guys, most of the time, it's laughing.
Yeah, well, we've got to try to keep it cheery. That's true.
Attaboy. So, but I do want to kind of gloat for a second with you. I think it's very interesting that, was it Hastert that said this would be Obama's Waterloo?
Yes. Well, they were trying to make it his Waterloo.
Yeah,
they were
well,
I think it was DeMint, actually.
It's just that he's not Napoleon. Hastert is.
Right. Well, yeah, that's what David Frum actually wrote. David Frum, you know, a noted conservative pundit, really wrote what, you know, sounded like a blog version of a suicide note for the Republican Party today because he was so miserable about this
Obama
fact.
Obama is Wellington, and
right.
he wins. And
yeah.
guess what happens after that battle?
Right. The entire...
So maybe we've seen the end of the Republican machine sort of here because the moneyed interest lost big time here.
It's
yesterday.
True. Absolutely. I thank you so much for the call, Charlie. By the way, I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin in May doing some stand-up. It'll be a good time. Let's go to Alpha in Chicago, Illinois. Alpha, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hal, thank you. You know, this mandate that's in this bill,
mm-hmm.
this court challenge to this mandate, if it's successful, we can just slide in that Alan Grayson buy into Medicare situation.
Mm-hmm.
And on this racism through the Tea Party,
right.
through the teabaggers, let me put it like this. What happened to guilt by association? You know, as in Reverend Wright, Bill Ayers.
Absolutely.
And there's another group of, you know, the Republicans defend it as a few crazies here, people acting bad. You know, another group of crazies have affected 1.3 billion people. They're called Al-Qaeda. The Republicans, by their own standards, are the Ku Klux Klan party.
Wow, that's a fantastic way of putting it. I thank you for the call. That's, you know, and it's true. I mean, the fact that they can kind of just shrug off everybody else's, the accusations like this, where, I mean, they literally are yelling racial epithets and spitting on members of Congress on their way to vote on a health care bill It's just insanity. Let's see. Tom in North Hollywood. Are you there, Tom?
Hal, I have two appeals to make, actually. One is we stop using the A word.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is a woman's right to choose versus
right.
the government's right to choose. And we in the media fall into this trap by calling
right.
it either anti-abortion or whatever. So you stop using the word. It's too loaded. It's too emotional. And the second thing is we don't allow the right to call themselves the pro-life party anymore because we are the pro-life party. And this bill is pro-life for all Americans.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. That's fantastic. And I will actually actively work to make that change in my own vocabulary so that we're dealing with, you know, a woman's right to choose versus the government's right to choose, or the idea of forced pregnancy, which I think is another great way of putting this. Mike in Los Angeles.
Hi, Hal. I just want to congratulate everybody that made this happen. But I got a problem with the libertarian who doesn't want
to. Who said, I'm young and I don't need health care? Right.
Yeah, I work in a medical center, and yesterday I had four patients on life support, the most expensive patients there are. And three of them were under the age of 39, and the fourth got injured, which led to his hospitalization before he was 40 in a motor vehicle accident. Also, you know, under law, we have to take care of people who are hurt. But maybe a libertarian paradise could result if this fellow had a do not transport medallion and
right.
legal status, so that if you get hurt out there, you don't get taken to the hospital. You just get to die in the street.
Exactly. I got to go to a break, and I thank you, Mike, for making that point. I think that's a terrific one to do. We got to take a break. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12. We're going to take your calls at the top of the hour. Fantastic day. You can check us out, by the way, on Livestream. I'm just looking at Tony here. Livestream.com/Hal Sparks. Join us in the chat. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. This is the first day I'll be here all week. Try the veal. It's going to be a fantastic week. It has been huge, huge. Last night, the Democrats in the House passed health care reform 219 to 216. I want to get to some of the calls because we've had a lot of people waiting today, but this is stunning. And I'm going to take this one just because they've been holding on the longest. Let's go to Randy in St. Anthony.
Hi.
Randy there? Hiya.
I'm here. Now that I hear that the center of the Republican campaign in 2010 will be a promise to repeal,
okay.
I have some slogans for them.
Awesome.
Vote for us, and we will restore the right of health insurance companies to deny you coverage for a pre-existing condition.
Right, that's a huge sell.
And vote for us, and we will restore the right of insurance companies to cancel you the minute you get sick. Vote for us, and we will take away your right to have your 26-year-old child on your insurance policy. Vote for us, and we will deny insurance coverage for 32 million Americans. Vote for us, and we will restore $1 trillion to the federal deficit over the next 20 years. And if the Republican Party thinks that those are messages that will resonate in their favor in 2010, in the words of George W. Bush, I say bring it on.
Right. Well said. It's pretty stunning that they actually think this is going to be a selling point. Oh, by the way, I got to do a little business. Tony's pointing a finger at me. I've got to do some business. You know, Carbonite is a great product. Your computer could crash at any time. That's why I urge you to get Carbonite online backup today. That's what we use here at the Stephanie Miller Show. Don't wait. She has a special offer for you. For the special offer, a 15-day free trial plus 2 months free with any subscription. If you use the offer code Stephanie, that's STEPHANIE, that's Carbonite.com, offer code Stephanie. How about that? That was an ad. That was good. Did I do the what did you think of the reading of the ad? You didn't like it? Sorry. I'll do better next time. Quit it. All right, fine. Gosh. Tony does not approve of my carbonite reading. I'm like, anybody want to use carbonite? Anybody? Maybe try carbonite? You think it'd be a good idea? Right. Let's go to Paul in Chicago, Illinois, because it's my favorite city in North America. Paul, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Hiya.
I just want to say thank you, Hal Sparks, Stephanie Miller, for keeping it up. And also want to say thank you to Ed Schultz,
mm-hmm.
Tom Hartman. You know, you guys are the source for truth and news, unlike ABC, NBC, CNN. Mm-hmm. And now, can we say Fox? Can we eliminate Fox Channel on my DirecTV?
Yes, you can. I think that would be that would be really difficult to do. Thank you for the call. I think you're right in that, you know, progressive talk radio and especially, you know, people like Ed Schultz really did have a big part to play in making sure this continued through. I had my issues with some of them along the way, kind of overbarking, as it were, trying to kind of sheepdog the president in one direction or another without taking into account the legislative hurdles that he had to go through to get any of this stuff done. But I also want to let's go to Glenn in Ann Arbor, Michigan, to talk about what he was up against.
Hal?
Hey, Glenn. Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, he's up against some really ugly opposition. It's scary, mm-hmm. actually. Who did the guy with that sign want to shoot?
Right, exactly.
I'd like to hear him explain that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a terroristic act. I mean, the Patriot Act, I may disagree with many provisions of it, but it's still the law of the land, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
right, that would seem like a violation of the Patriot Act to me. Yeah.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. And so you know, all those law and order Republicans, they need to answer for their own teabaggers.
Yeah, no question. It's funny that, and I thank you for the call, it's funny that they think they can just kind of walk away from it, you know, and shrug and go, well, you know, there's a couple of crazies and it's no big deal or whatever. Meanwhile, they stand out there with them, reading directly to them, people like Jim DeMint coming out and waving the flag. By the way, this is why I love the internet. On Twitter, Windy City Watch was good enough to send a link. If you follow me on Twitter, you can kind of see that in there. That apparently Jim DeMint's Facebook page is being spammed with Waterloo by ABBA videos. That people are literally posting the ABBA Waterloo video on his page, like every 2 minutes. So that's pretty spectacular. If you get a chance, it's on. Blog.windycitywatch.com. You'll see that come up for today. Pretty hysterical. And by the way, we have the chat going on at livestream.com/HalSparks or halsparks.com/livestream, however you would like to do it. We got 328 viewers in there watching the show on live stream and commenting on this. And really, there's a great conversation going on in there. If you want to be a part of it, that's fantastic. And of course, you can follow me at HalSparks on Twitter. Let's go to Bob in Daytona Beach. Bob, where are you? There you are.
Good morning. I'm right here in Daytona Beach. Right.
Well, lucky you. I was just in Fort Lauderdale last weekend, and it was spectacular.
It was beats my place in New York that I just got rid of. Right. Real quickly, by the way, those of us in the trenches supporting this issue are very busy this weekend trying to explain to the people, screw your head on correctly. And surprisingly, the people that most of the talk complained about it was because they were afraid it was going to cost them a few dollars because they already have theirs. And that's the incredible greedy non-Christian thing. They all got theirs, so they don't want anybody else to have theirs or at any price. I'm old enough to remember when Medicare first came in 64. The Social Security Administration hired hundreds of people throughout the country, perhaps thousands, to be field workers for whenever a person is admitted to a hospital at that time and didn't have already signed up for Medicare to protect the hospital's interest and those of the professional providers. They had agents go out to the hospitals and take their application in the field, and they could go back 60 days from the date of application to justify coverage for these individuals. So no doubt if you're looking for a job now and unemployed, especially if you have life experiences, start looking at your Social Security federal guidelines for how to apply for a job, because there will be jobs opening in not-too-near future so that you can go through your training and then get into a decent employment history. It may not be what you were making as a yuppie professional, but with your six figures, but it'll certainly be something that'll steer you into a better retirement than what you have looking
at
right now.
And there's also, and thank you for the call. It's there's also a transitional element to this bill that allows people to keep their coverage even if they're switching jobs, which is a huge shift. I mean, Nancy Pelosi gave a great speech. If you get a chance, look it up on YouTube or on I think MSNBC has both the president's remarks and her remarks on, and her point was is that this is profoundly a personal thing and a great thing for entrepreneurs, that if you have been saying, well, I really want to start my own business but I can't afford to lose my health care, now that's not an issue. That's no longer an issue for you. You can now carry that with you and still buy into the bigger exchanges and have it for basically the same price that you were getting when you were with a big company. If you want to strike out on your own, that's a new thing. That is brand new in the American medical system. Let's see. Dick in Canada. Richard in Canada, are you there?
Yes. Hi. How you doing?
Now I have to warn everyone that you are a communist, socialist, Nazi propagandist from Canada, Canuckistan, and we have to put on their special earmuffs to filter out all the socialist lies that we would be pouring. So I have to give them a moment to put on their tinfoil hats, and now you can talk. Okay, there you go.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You know,
that's good. Oh, wait, but I do have to play this while you talk about the Canadian system.
Yes, okay, that's fine. I can live with that. By the way, I'm also an American citizen. I'm one of those dual
citizens. Oh, you're an American, never mind.
As well, but I'm also Canadian, so. But anyway, here's my point. I think it's really important. I think you guys will, doesn't seem anybody's thought of this. At least of all the Democrats, they seem to be not making their point as well as they'd like. You know the issue of mandates? Everybody's all upset about mandates. Well, if you're going to offer no preconditions.
Mm-hmm.
The only way they can do that to be, I hate to say this, fair to the insurance companies, is to make it a mandated thing that everybody, if you're going to have, you know what it is, it's a group policy kind of scenario, that everybody has to pay into it, and that way everybody's covered. Because if you don't have if you don't have a mandate, then people are going to come down with cancer and then phone the insurance company and say, oh, now I want insurance. It's a simple mathematical thing. It's like car insurance. You can't suddenly ask for car insurance after
when you have an accident.
Right? And it completely diffuses the whole argument about mandates. They say, do you want no preconditions? Well, then you have to start paying. And if you start in your 20s and you never get sick and you die of a heart attack in the night, then you're just lucky. It's just like a person who has a car insurance all their life and never has an accident. Well, that's what insurance is all about, right?
Right. That's the essence of how insurance is built in the first place. I mean, the entire concept of insurance was, we'll all pull our money together, and when you get sick, there'll be money to help take care of you.
What they do now is, if they have preconditions, what they're doing is they're fine-tuning the membership in this plan by saying, if you have a precondition, we won't let you in. Therefore, that changes the math for them and the risk. It's called
it's not so that other people can get more coverage either. They're still denying people who have normal health care issues their coverage as well. They're just pulling more profits from it.
That's right, exactly. In this way, well, I don't have any problem with the insurance companies making a profit, because in a truly competitive situation, of course, that's one of the questions, right?
Right.
This issue of competitiveness. But if you're going to make the insurance companies provide the support, you've got to give them this mandate.
Yep. That's an excellent point.
And it's not unfair at all. Right.
Nope. I appreciate the call, even though you're a Canadian socialist monster, and you're you also can live in America. Thank you so much for the call. We got to take a break right now. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. StephanieMiller.com, where you can email everybody. And 1-800-STEPH-12 is the number. We're going to get back to the calls right after this break. Also, streaming on livestream.com/Hal Sparks. Join us in the chat. There's 344 lovely people in there that are like-minded and would love to hear from you. I will talk to you right after this break. 1-800-STEPH-12. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Makes me sick in a wonderful, wonderful way.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
My whole
whole life is, you know what I mean, Chris? It is, it's in my computer. Everything to do with my personal life, with my show, with my professional life. I have various, you know, I have fart jokes. I have stuff that I need for the show. I have scripts. I have a... we have sound, everything we use for the show, sound bites, sound clips, they're all in there.
Pictures of dogs.
Mommy, you make it big.
That's really the only thing she has on her computer is pictures of dogs.
If you looked at my computer at home right now, all my desktop icons are some pictures of the dogs.
Right, exactly.
That's why we all use on the Stephanie Miller Show, Carbonite to back up our computers. It backs up your PC or your Mac automatically when you're connected to the internet. Think of the panic you'd feel if you lost your most important stuff. Remember, you've got to back it up first and get it back with Carbonite. It's easy and it is $55. That's it for the entire year. Go to Carbonite.com right now. Use my offer code Stephanie. You get a 15-day free trial plus 2 months free with your subscription. That's Carbonite.com. Offer code Stephanie for your free trial and 2 months free if you subscribe. Carbonite.com. Offer code Stephanie.
The Stephanie Miller Show. Not quite summer, but it is time for Dancing in the Streets.
Oh, yeah!
That's right. Healthcare passed last night. It is the law of the land as soon as Barack Obama signs it. Now, there is some question as when he's actually going to do the signing. Common wisdom has that he's going to sign it when the reconciliation bill passes the Senate, which has all the changes that the House insisted on to pass the Senate bill in the first place. That's why we had three votes last night. And then he will have, I have no doubt, a very public signing ceremony, followed by a special episode of the Glenn Beck Show, which will sound something like this. What? And Glenn Beck's head will explode. And that's what happens. It was really kind of an amazing night last night. It finally actually passed. After everyone said it would not. If you'll recall, this was Jim DeMint said this was going to be Obama's Waterloo. By the way, people are spamming his Jim DeMint's Facebook page with videos of ABBA's Waterloo right now. So if you can go to Jim DeMint's page, hopefully somebody will put the link in up on my Twitter. That would be terrific. There actually is, if you look for that retweet on there, if you're following me on Hal Sparks, at Hal Sparks on Twitter, you can find that link. Judy B just put that back up too. It's really hilarious. Let's go to some of the calls though. The phones have been ringing off the hook today. This is one of my favorite ones. Fred in Orange County. Are you there?
Yeah, it's a hell of a morning, isn't it?
It is. Hey, yeah, turn your radio down.
Okay, listen. One of the two major benefits we're getting out of this healthcare thing is, Rush will be leaving, and Sean Hannity's head will be exploding, I guess.
Absolutely. There is actually, if you do, you have to turn your radio off.
It is off. I swear to God.
Okay, I'm feeding back on you, so I'm getting myself again and again.
How about now?
There you go.
Another thing I want to add, since I live in conservative Orange County down here, late last night, I thought it was the fireworks at Disneyland I was hearing. It turns out all those Republican heads were like, popping.
Exactly.
All over the place.
Just popping all over the place.
I really am happy.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for the call. That was one of the things that leading into this was Rush Limbaugh said that, man, if this passes, he's moving to Costa Rica. Now, we all know he goes to Costa Rica because it sort of lax laws on all kinds of things, but one of the other things that he will, his rude awakening that will come when he goes to Costa Rica, is that they have essentially government health care. So that might be a little shocking to him once he gets down there, but of course he might actually need it. Let's see. I want to go to Matt in Chicago because he has a question about the fines for not buying the insurance. Are you there, Matt?
Yeah, hi, Hal. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, thanks.
okay, yeah, I'm new to this Bluetooth thing, so.
Very crazy. So you're sitting in a restaurant by yourself with a Bluetooth headset on, and everybody's exactly. going, who's he talking to? And people on your left think you're insane, and people on your right think you're in Star Trek. I get it, yeah.
Exactly. I'm one of those people who used to hate people like me now.
Right. So, but you had a question about the fines?
Oh, sure. Well, what's happened to me is I just turned 27, so now I'll have to come off my parents' plan.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's fine. It is what it is. But now why I'm situated in terms of my, like, annual income, I don't know if I'm going to be able to afford premiums on insurance, especially when I have a very expensive pre-existing condition. So how am I going to find out what the penalty is going to be? I mean, if I can't afford the premiums, how do they expect me to afford to pay the penalties?
Well, obviously, there's only a narrow window where that will really affect people. You have to kind of make a pretty decent wage. If you're really having problems paying for that kind of insurance and you have a pre-existing condition, there are all kinds of factors in this bill that protect you and subsidize, you know, your payment either through your employer or through your own, like, tax credits back. So it's really for people who are sort of in the upper, 200s where they really can afford health care, but they're just choosing not to. You know,
$18,000 a year.
You make how much?
Let's say I make $18,000 a
year. Yeah, dude, this is not your problem. That's not your problem at all. We got to take a break. Thank you so much for calling in. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We'll get to more of your calls after the break. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie Miller on the Stephanie Miller Show. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Moots while they're away on vacation. StephanieMiller.com is the website. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We are talking healthcare today, obviously. To catch you back up, healthcare reform passed last night. The Senate bill, as well as the reconciliation package, passed through the House. Now the reconciliation package goes to the Senate for a reconciliation vote. All they need are 51 or 50 plus Joe Biden. To get it through. The House passed health care last night on basically the promise that the Senate will pass the reconciliation package. But as it stands, the Senate bill is now, after being signed by the president, which he will do in a signing ceremony, will be the law of the land. If any Republican, by the way, votes against the reconciliation package, they are effectively voting for the Louisiana Purchase and the Gatorade and all the backroom deals that they complain about that have been that the House voted to remove from the bill and passed last night. Top 10 immediate benefits of health care are available on HuffPost and Crooks and Liars, not the least of which is children under age 19 cannot be excluded for pre-existing conditions. Adults with pre-existing conditions can buy into a national high-risk pool until the exchanges come online. And they might be pricey, but they will be. You'll actually have coverage. Small businesses will be entitled to a tax credit for 2009 and 10 that's up to 50% of what they're paying for their employees' health coverage. The donut hole, the much-maligned donut hole for Medicare Part D, is closed. Finally, making prescription medications more affordable for seniors. And there is a requirement that I love, that all insurers must post their balance sheets on the Internet and fully disclose administrative costs, executive compensation packages, and benefit payments. That's stunning. And thanks to Bernie Sanders, it authorizes early funding of community health centers in all 50 states. It's a stunning shift for America. It's a really terrific thing. So let's go to Melissa in Phoenix, Arizona. Melissa, you there?
I am. Hi, Hal.
Hi.
I wanted to say that I am a small business owner mm-hmm. and a person with a pre-existing condition, so this is a beautiful day for me. it's just wonderful. And I have kids, and I live in Arizona, which we are getting our Medicaid cut.
Cut off. 46,000 kids the governor has just bumped off of the state S-chip, essentially.
and this is a beautiful day for me. I am celebrating, and it is a awesome, glorious day. I just wanted to tell you that as a person with a pre-existing condition, my husband has one also, and we're small business owners, and this is just a godsend.
That's great. Well, I'm very happy for you, and thank you for the call. The timing is everything in all this. You know, a lot of people are waiting for this. And some of these things that are fantastic won't kick in for a while. And we had to give that timing away so that we could get non-existent Republican votes. I mean, that part still stuns me. But they are there and they are coming. This incremental approach that actually has been laid out is pretty fantastic. So let's go to Jackie in Erin, New York. Jackie, you there? Jackie?
Yeah, you there?
Hi, there you are.
Yep. I just wanted to say that I was just glued to the TV last night. From yesterday afternoon to all the way till after midnight, I was glued. I was going from CNN to MSNBC to C-SPAN, and I even went to Fox after the vote to see if they had rewritten it yet, because they're so busy trying to rewrite history all the way from our textbooks to what happened in the last administration, you know. So I'm just ecstatic that it was passed. And
you watched that as minute
for everybody who voted for it.
Yes, you watch. By the time, you know, the popular parts go through, all this talk about that the president made a point of saying, and thank you so much for the call, the president made a point of going, there are Republican ideas in here, and they won't even vote for their own ideas because they're just, they're just against this on all fronts. They'll basically, anything that's popular with the American people, they'll say, well, that was our idea to start with. That was, we wanted that. That's what we wanted, the things we were pushing. We didn't vote for it. We wouldn't vote for it. We wouldn't even offer a bill of our own that allowed for it. But, hey, whatever. Okay, Rob in Sacramento. You've been hanging on for a bit. Rob, you there?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I had a question. Well,
sure.
Okay. If I remember correctly, the House passed their version first, correct?
Correct. That's how it works. And then it goes to the Senate. And then they have to reconcile the two bills, and then after the bill is reconciled, the Senate votes on it once more, and then the president signs it. That's our that's our Schoolhouse Rock truncated version of how it works.
Okay, but the House passed their version first, which was a better version, correct?
Yeah, well, yeah, in some people's opinion, sure, absolutely.
Okay, so why the Senate didn't vote on it? Is that correct?
No, the Senate votes on it, and then the Senate has their own bill that incorporates some elements of it, and vice versa. Essentially, there's a House bill and there's a Senate bill. The House bill passes their bill, the Senate passes their bill, and then they sit in a reconciliation process, which they sidestepped through this bill through this vote last night by creating the reconciliation package as a secondary bill. In the House that can be signed by the president. So after reconciliation, after you take both bills by the House, which usually in the normal process are fairly minor changes, but this is healthcare and it's huge. So they had to do this, and then there had to be a final passage of this. Now that since there were changes to the Senate bill through that to make it match the House bill, it goes back to the Senate.
Because I'm thinking that the Senate didn't pass the House's version of the bill.
No, they don't. That's basically what they do now. They pass the and I thank you for the call. I'll try and clarify it as best I can. The House comes up with their own bill. The Senate comes up with their own bill. The Senate basically sends their bill back down to the House, and then they take the stuff that passed in the Senate and the stuff that passed in the House, and they do a reconciliation process where they sit and they kind of go through this a committee process, rather, where the committee sits there and they mark up both bills and they say, okay, this is the best of both bills. Let's sign this one. And then once the House does it, they send it back up to the Senate. The Senate says, okay, that's fine with us. And then that goes to the president. It's basically like, we both have a plan for something. We come up with it and you go, okay, this is my plan. Take a look at it. Make changes. Let me look at what changes you made. I'm cool with that, and then I'll send it to the president. And that's basically the process in a nutshell. And then, but in this case, because they didn't want to go through the process of reconciliation, because through the committee process, there was so much area where the Republicans could stall it forever, that they decided to sidestep that part, create a secondary bill, the reconciliation bill, and pass that normally. And then now that it goes to the back up to the Senate with this little thing, all they do is go, okay, we're going to add this part and send it straight to the president on a clear party line vote. so they don't have to beat a filibuster again. So I know it's a little confusing, but it is a very important element of this whole process. Let's go to Barry in Arlington, Mass. Is that where you are, Barry?
I'm in Arlington, Massachusetts.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was calling up when I was back in the end of 2007, mm-hmm. after the health care reform had been enacted here in Massachusetts. I did not have health insurance at the end of 2007, so I was hit with a $400 fee at the beginning uh-huh. of 2008, and I was forced to pay that. And to me, I find it problematic, this idea of a penalty of $750 for people who don't buy into the plan. To me, it seems like you might have working class and lower middle class people who might not have money necessarily to pay that, or who might be able to pay it, but it would be extremely onerous. Mm-hmm. And secondly, on principle, it just seems to me turning health care into a kind of punishment, saying if you don't get health care under our plan, you're going to be hit with a penalty.
But at the same time, let's look at the inverse of it, in that let's say you don't have health insurance. And you get sick or injured and you need massive care, you're effectively punishing everybody else in the process because you drive up healthcare costs and you drive up insurance costs. And that's by just extracting yourself from the system. So that's, that part of it can be read both ways. In this case, at least, A, you're covered in case anything happens to you. I mean, it may seem like a penalty until you need it. And then in the other case, everyone else is covered from the potential of having to carry you if anything goes wrong. Now, we brought up this earlier, and I thank you for the call. This was kind of brought up, and SciGuy in our chat room brought up the idea that we're talking about maybe if the libertarians out there really want to go without coverage because they think that's their right, then perhaps they should carry a card or wear a medallion around their neck that says, "I don't treat me if I get injured. Leave me here." And SciGuy suggested maybe it should have a cyanide capsule in it. So then, like, you've just been hit by a bus, and you just go, "Oh, sorry, don't take me to the hospital. I don't want to be a burden to anyone." And then you take the pill, and therefore you have no impact on insurance premiums or taxation for the rest of us. That I don't think is going to happen anytime soon, quite frankly. Let's go with Ginger in Fullerton, California, if I can make this happen. There you go. Ginger in Fullerton, California, you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was hard to get through to you today. It's a very popular day for you.
It's tons of calls today, and it's obviously a big deal. But go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to refer, that last caller kind of hit on it a little bit. The first caller that had said, "I'm young, I'm healthy, I really don't need health insurance." But what we're not thinking about is long term. Like you mm-hmm. always say, nobody thinks long term in this country. He right. probably eats McDonald's two or three times a week. And this sort of thing can help preventative care so that we don't have these big expenses at the end.
Right. Well, that's one of the, number four on the top 10 immediate benefits of health care reform from the list that Crooks and Liars put together is free preventative care for all. And of course, the community health centers providing primary and dental and vision services to people in the community. A lot of that, you watch as we all start taking on the cost of other people's health, we will also have a bigger stake in it as well, not only in our own lives, but in other people's lives. And the idea of going, look, we can't just be eating crap all the time. We've got to start exercising. Maybe it's one of the things that comes from this healthcare bill, quite frankly, is the reinvigoration of gym in schools. Phys ed and sports are getting stripped out all over the country. You'll have team sports, so special kids who are really into sports will get it, but everybody else is kind of SOL and on their own. And, this, when we start going, look, all right, we need to bring these premiums down, then, by God, we need to lower these costs somehow. One of the ways we can do it is by making sure people are healthier longer.
Take the crap out of the school food, too, and really get focused on keeping people healthy before they need these big expenses.
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm going to talk about this after the break, because we got to take a break real quick so we can come back. We're almost out of time for the day. It's fantastic. I'll be back right after this, but I want to talk about what the other Obama is doing about that very issue. And, Ginger, I thank you very much for the call. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, no problem.
So I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. Stephanie Miller Show.
It's all about fun. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
while you wonder why I always dress in black, why you never see bright colors on my back, and why do
it's the Stephanie Miller Show on Health Parks, filling in for Steph.
Stephanie Miller.
While she's away on vacation, you know, we're just here today talking about health care. Because I'm here fighting for the rights of everybody. Have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we want life to be actual, living, full, vibrant life, not limping, goitered, diseased, H1N1 life like the Republicans do. That's what they want. That's not what we want. I'm Hal Sparks. Hour, by the way, is brought to you by Carbonite. I'm just going to throw that back in because I don't know that I did it justice earlier on. By God, your computer could crash at any time. That's why I urge you to get Carbonite online backup today. That's what I use. Don't wait. Steph has a special offer for you. For the special offer, a 15-day free trial plus 2 free months with any prescription. If you use the offer code Stephanie, that's carbonite.com, offer code Stephanie. How about that? And don't forget the P90X. While I'm here in town, I will be using Stephanie's P90X if she's left the chin-up bar that I built for her behind. I do the P90X, even though I'm not paid by the Stephanie Miller Show to use it. I do it on my own. So there you go. I purchased it myself. There you go. Let's go to we've only got a few minutes left in the show today, but I really want to get to these calls. And I want to thank everybody, by the way, that's been in the chat. We've got 300 people in the chat today, and they've been fantastic. You guys have had a terrific conversation going on aside from all this. And, of course, everybody following me at Hal Sparks on Twitter. We also have part of that in. One of the newest things is Ray K58, who's on the Twitter with me, posted this thing that apparently – PepsiCo is about to cut the sodium, sugar, and fat in all their products. I'd like to think that's healthcare related, but I think it might have something to do with the fact that Canada has stricter laws than we do and is pushing those laws. And if you don't do that, you can't ship it into Canada. And a lot of these products that are in the States are in Canada back and forth. So we benefit from a lot of their harsher food and drug laws. Okay, let's see. John in Los Angeles. John, you there?
Yes, I am here.
How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. I'm a little angry, though, but I think this health care reform legislation is just another one of the bailouts to the corporations. In this case, they're the big health insurance corporations.
Mm-hmm. Because of the lack of public option, you mean?
Well, not just that. I mean, the more people read or learn about this, the less they're going to like it, I think. The
I don't find that to be the case, but
the previous caller case in point, when she was gushing about prior conditions.
Pre-existing conditions.
That doesn't kick in for 4 years. There's a lot that can happen in 4 years.
That's true, but right now, immediately, hold on a second. Right now, immediately, as soon as the president signs it, people with pre-existing conditions can buy into a high-risk pool so that they can actually get insurance right away.
It is a bailout, though.
Beg your pardon?
This legislation is a bailout, and the reason why I call it a bailout for the corporation, insurance corporations, is that at this time where we see them having, I guess because of their greed or their incompetence, raise their rates, they are in desperate straits right now. Either people are not paying their premiums because they lose their jobs, they're unable to afford it, or the people are just choosing not to pay, finally, and voting with their wallets. But this legislation also is basically allowing them to tell states, the federal government, to tell states that they're not able to do much on their own.
Because ultimately, right now you've got it so the insurance companies actually are trying to do a public. Will you let me answer your question? Mm-hmm.
Trying to do their own version of a public insurance or public health.
Right.
Okay. Public option.
There's nothing that stops that in this bill.
It puts restrictions on the state's abilities. It grants a certain amount of monopoly-ish power.
No, it doesn't. It actually breaks down the monopoly part of that. You can actually now, and some states, like California is a case in point, where they're trying to attract other people in other states to buy into their system. Because strictly because of that, and I thank you for the call. I want to get to some other people, but people can buy into the California system if they end up putting together, let's say, a single payer system. The Senate bill, as it stands, even pre-reconciliation, leaves room for the creation of nonprofits that can be available in the exchange. So let's go to Joel in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I want to get to everybody before we get in. We only got a couple of minutes left. Joel, you there?
Goitered H1N1 healthcare by Republicans, is that what you said earlier?
Yeah.
Look, I just wanted to encourage everybody. I know we all want to exhale. This is a great day. It's a beautiful day. But right. We have to support our congressman that took a brave vote. So go to actblue.org. Make some donations to your congressman. Shout out to mine, Martin Heinrich, and whoever else that fought the good fight, Alan Grayson, Anthony Weiner. All those guys are great.
Right, who've really been putting the hammer down on this thing. Yeah.
Yeah, we got to make it easy for them to have made this tough vote. So let's support them and let's do more than just vote for them. Let's support them. But I did have a question, Hal.
Sure.
I believe I heard last night that in 2013, all the senators and representatives will have to buy into the same exchange that their constituents do. Is that right?
That's exactly it. And now they have.
How are the Republicans going to live, Hal? How are they going to live if they have to have the same health care as their constituents? I just don't know.
I don't know. It's almost like they're going to have to rely on the same fire department we all rely on. Oh, wait, they do.
Thank you, Hal.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. We've only got about a minute left. Is that right, Tony? Yeah, we got a minute left. I don't know. We won't have time for a call. I want to wrap this up, though. I will be in all week for Steph. We will be talking, no doubt, about this as it goes along. Over the course of this week, you're going to see the Senate making moves on this, and the president will be signing a bill very possibly this week. He may have already signed, by the way, the Senate bill to make it officially law, just in case the Senate feels like they can backpedal and not do this. But we will find that out in the next couple of days. But I will be here in the New York office, the New York, I don't know if you want to call it a lair of the Stephanie Miller Show, filling in for Steph and the Mooks all week. Thank you for calling in. Thanks for everybody that was in the chat with us today and on livestream.com/Al Sparks. You can find out more about me on HalSparks.com and listen in the rest of the week and give us a call. Big thanks and shout out to Tony, our board op, and of course Miranda, our call screener. We will see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.